Welcome to the Frederick Faith Debate on Frederick's News Radio, 930 WFMD. I'm your host and moderator, Troy Skinner. Faith Debate is brought to us by AllShred Mobile Document Destruction, Putman Plumbing and Heating, and Dynamic Living Solutions. This week is a first on the show. We have with us Jonathan Schweitzer, who is the pastor of Crossroads Valley Chapel here in town, who is a theist.
Yes.
And opposite him, we have Dr. Karen Gray, who is an atheist.
Awesome.
So,
aren't they calling those brights now? Is that a word that's
out there? I really prefer the term non-theist.
Yeah, non-theist, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, most people refer to an atheist and maybe don't think about what that means. A, like atypical, meaning non-typical, meaning, you know, not believing in a theist, right. God. Karen's going to be representing a viewpoint on the show, not just the show, but later today. We'll talk about that in a second, too. You're actually speaking later today at the Frederick County Public Library downtown.
Yes, that's correct.
In fact, let's do that now so I don't forget. That's going to be this afternoon at 1:30 for a interactive exploration of religious atheism is how it's promoted here. Is that a pretty good? It's being presented by Fresh. Frederick County Public Library neither endorses or promotes the views of Fresh, it says. But Fresh stands for Frederick Secular Humanists. And I guess they meet monthly or something, and you're their featured speaker this month.
Yeah, and of course a little bit problematic for them because they're secular, and I say that I am a kind of religious person. So we're going to have some interesting discussions there also.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, then you and I would agree, because on this show, Jonathan's heard me say this before, I think everybody's religious, whether they want to acknowledge it or not. I think everybody has a religion.
I think everyone has belief systems, but I do think some people have extremely secular belief systems. And in fact, you're looking very puzzled, Jonathan, but one of the first points I make is that for a monotheist from the Levantine tradition, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, to even talk about non-theistic religiousness is a contradiction in terms, because to be religious is to be in proper relationship with God. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, but I've done enough, I think, study of like non-theistic religions and others to recognize that there's language that is used to describe an experience of connectedness with other people, with the world, with the cosmos that does not include a personal God. And so, yeah, I would personally define, like, say, on a Sunday morning when I'm preaching, proper righteous spirituality as being, you know, being reconnected with the Father through Jesus Christ. However, I am aware of the language and the discussion that goes on.
The more academic concept of religion and whatnot that you're willing to recognize exists as a factor within the world.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, actually, within the context in which I find myself, even defining the sense in which I am religious is not easy. It is actually very difficult, especially for secular people. I think you have just accepted it more easily than do those who really believe not being religious is important. It's important to be secular, and I think the group this afternoon may have more problems than you have in accepting the sense of atheistic and religious at the same time.
You know, it's interesting. I was telling you about it on the Washington Post. They have this On Faith, and Sam Harris, who, you know, is a popular atheist of the day, wrote the book Letters to a Christian Nation, is arguing in one of his posts on there that that an atheist can have a religious experience, you know, and he's actually getting a degree in neurological science. I don't know if that's the right even phraseology, but, you know, grappling with how the brain processes, you know, this sense of connectedness, you know, it, so much so that literally there were some 280 posts on there of atheists saying, at long last, there's an atheist out there that can describe these things, you know, because I've never been able to describe this experience that I had that I felt like was a spiritual experience, but wasn't quite wasn't something that I could describe, because everybody then would have accused me of not being an atheist anymore. Mm-hmm. And they felt like Sam was kind of helping to give them the language to describe that. And I think that may be along the lines of some things that you're grappling
with. It is somewhat like that, although I have to say I tend to be a hyper-intellectualist. It's a fault of mine.
Sure.
That I readily recognize. And
my dad was too, so I've learned to love people like
learned
you.
To live with
us. Yes,
that.
Yes.
Yeah, my family's learned to live with me too. But
not just live with, but love, you know, it's good.
Exactly.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, well, that's a special kind of goodness to get that far. But one of the things that is very important to me is the recognition that the human brain is actually a very fallible thing. It can only understand certain things in certain ways, only so far. It remakes memories all the time. It reworks stuff. It is not reliable. And it's very limited in terms of what it can do, experience, understand. And here we have reality. And reality is incredible. And I say that literally, which means it is beyond believing, in a sense. Even the foremost cosmologists of our time are struggling with some of the most basic questions.
Yeah.
And one of the fun questions,
Stephen Hawking, to
one of the fun
top,
questions I have for when I get stuck someplace in line and I don't have a book to read, why is there something rather than nothing?
Yeah.
You know, actually, there are really interesting responses to that question these days.
So the question is, why is there something as opposed to nothing?
But
and you'll just sit and think about it if you got nothing else to do.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm
and
following
we were,
you.
We were talking a little before the show about the importance of humility.
Yeah.
And the reason that I'm not a strict secularist is not because I am agnostic. The whole concept of God, I have never been able to find any justifiable way of defining that or using it or developing the thought that to me I can honestly agree with.
It
would be dishonest for me to assign any of those that I have studied. And
I
that
see.
Was my area of doctorate study.
Sure.
And that was my doctorate was in 75. I'm a 65-year-old woman.
And maybe we'll even talk about some of that stuff next week or the week after.
Right.
Yeah.
Continued to study it. And, you know, it just, there are many reasons why I think it doesn't work.
Sure. We won't go into those now. But the
we
point
won't
is.
We won't go into those now. But I think that one needs to have humility about the fact that the universe and reality is astonishing.
Yeah.
It is incredibly beautiful.
Yes.
I get so excited about it.
Sure.
You know,
with
it is
reason.
Beyond me. And what is consciousness?
Yeah.
You know, by the time I get through feeling and talking about these things, when I look at people having a religious experience, I have the profound sense that as the experience goes, as the neurology goes, there isn't an enormous amount of difference going on here. In terms of it. And I'm not willing to just back up into...
Yeah.
I have friends who are scientists, who are secular scientists.
Sure.
Just back up into that kind of secular science mode where you cut off yourself from... I love the ancient mythologies. I love ancient epics.
Sure.
I love biblical literature.
Sure.
I love the great scriptures of all the religions.
Sure.
I never tire of reading and working in these. They are a vital, living, exciting part of my life.
Yeah, now this is interesting because you're talking about humility. And I think humility, and you'll have to tell me if this is right, is set off against the arrogance of thinking that we've got it all figured out.
Or that we have the, pardon me, but that we have
the truth, right.
And everybody else does not have the truth. Now, we do believe that.
Sure.
We humans do believe that.
Sure.
Humility simply means that every time we find ourselves thinking that, which is almost constantly, we pull back and say, wait a minute, you're a fallible, limited brain here. Just have a little bit of humility.
Sure. Because the reason I move in on that is because I think it's very likely that most people would say that I'm arrogant. And that I think that I know too much, you know, that, you know, because I claim that Jesus Christ is the way, the truth, and the life, the only way to God. And that being the case, that literally everybody that does not accept Christ per his words in the Gospels, that that they will not get to the Father. And so I get, you know, I feel very strongly about that. I don't make any bones about it. But that being the case, I am keenly aware of the fact that I know very little. But the fact that I know that, see, the problem is that statement in and of itself is a, it rules out that there's any other way to God, the Father.
Mm-hmm.
It claims to be the only way. And it was said by the guy who I think most of us would agree is had the most sublime vision in all of the history of the world. I mean, the Buddha never came as close to painting a vision of humanity and reconciliation as strong and as powerful as Christ did. And his comment, you know, to do unto others as you would have done unto you. I know there's others that had said, do not do unto others as you would not have them do to you. But clearly Christ in all of history is without a par.
Yeah, I wouldn't agree with that, actually.
So who's on a par with Christ?
Let it go. Yeah. I think there are a good number of people who are. And the Jesus message, and I don't want to argue Christianity to tell you the truth.
Yeah, we're just talking.
But the Jesus message is, in fact, not clear. I think of Jesus saying, I have not come to bring peace, but the sword.
But to bring a sword, and a man's enemies will be the members of his own household.
Yes, exactly.
See, that's totally clear to me.
And if you do not love me more than a mother and father and daughter and son.
In fact, he says, unless you hate those guys, you cannot be my disciple.
And when you look at any of the great religious leaders of the world, any of them, what you find, in fact, is something far more complex than the kind of simplistic, common everyday statements that people love to hang on to and throw around. But the truth is, in all the great religions where men and women with fantastic minds for seeking out the meaning of life and the struggle to understand and find right, find what your meaning is and purpose is, it is complex. It is not simple. It does
I totally agree that it's totally that it's very complex. However, I see absolutely no contradiction in any of Christ's statements. In fact, that's part of the reason why I think he's so amazing. I feel like there's a dynamic tension there that he says this, and then he says something that appears to be contradictory. And the reason why he's saying those two different things is because you and I, and this is central to Christian theology all through the ages, because as you and I meditate on or think about, like you were even describing earlier, what happens is we catch this reality that he was talking about something bigger than anything that we'd ever thought about before as a human race.
And so
as a result of that, he says these two things that seem contradictory, but as we're patient, as we're persistent, as we meditate on it, and this is the thing that part of the reason I think most people claim that Christianity is arrogant. One, because we do claim that Christ is the only way. But two, it's because there is inherent in the idea of faith something that I feel like was never on the face of the planet until Christ began to describe it. And the idea of faith is this idea that if we keep at it, that Christ wants to reveal God and the universe to us. It says it in James, that if any of you lacks wisdom, and it doesn't say lacks wisdom about God or lacks wisdom about, you know, his relationships, but lacks wisdom about anything, he should ask God, who gives to all without finding fault. And there's inherent in the Christian theology on faith, in perspective on God, that God, who created this immense, amazing world, is so amazing, and he wants to reveal all of that to us. And so you find this irrepressible passion that is built up in all of Christianity, so that we get the Keplers and we get the Shakespeares and we get the Beethovens, these people who grab a hold of this idea that we can discover music.
Okay, let's
we
back
can
up.
Discover science.
Whoa.
We can discover politics. We can come up with democracy, a whole, you know, human rights. And in the West, we have this irrepressible confidence that we can discover these things if we're humble enough to let God speak to us about
it. Okay.
And
can
I think
respond?
People think that that's arrogant.
Yeah. No, it's not arrogant. But what you have done with your material, and incidentally, there isn't a Christian theology. There are many Christian theologies. And I'm reminded of one
there
of my
are,
great
but for,
professors.
But for the record, there's a very clear body of togetherness, without a doubt.
Actually, there is
I've
none.
Read them. I've studied
but,
them. There are those that reject the Bible, but in rejecting the Bible, they come up with all this other stuff. But those that accept the Bible, there is pervasive agreement.
One can put the material together in very different ways, which is why you have such incredible diversity within Christianity, as you have within Hinduism and Buddhism. Probably the least diverse of all the great traditions is Islam. But I'm reminded of something that one of my professors at Harvard said, Wilfred Cantrell Smith, a beautiful, wonderful guy, great Christian also, incidentally, beautiful Christian. And,
of course, our definition
Smith
of
said,
that may or may not be the same, but that's
exactly.
fine. Sure.
But sort of what I think of as, you know, that ideal kind of loving, charitable, God-believing, person.
Yeah.
One of the things he said is, you know, there is no such thing as Buddhism. There is no such thing as Christianity. There is no such thing as Islam. There are only Buddhists. There are only Christians. There are only Muslims. That the real truth of the entity, the rest is a construct of our abstracting mind.
Sure,
and we
sure,
all
sure.
build systems.
I think therefore
we
I am,
all
so we build these systems of
yeah.
thought. Sure.
We all, and your system is actually radically different from some of the other people whom I certainly think have every right to be called Christians.
Even though they reject significant parts
ones.
Of the Bible.
No, they,
and they
understand
throw out whole,
it differently.
Whole parts of it.
They're not rejecting. They understand it differently.
They would deny that Christ did the miracles, or
they
would
understand
deny
it differently.
Or,
yes.
or they would say that it's all a myth
and
that's
they do,
designed for us to connect
the
with the divine and to connect with
anthropology.
Ourselves.
Anthropology, they do it on the basis
sure,
of
but the point is that
ancient literature.
The way that they approach the Bible is directly different from
yes.
how I
from
approach
someone
the Bible.
Who understands
in fact,
it
I think
literally.
People would call me a
yeah.
fundamentalist for that because
yeah,
I approach
exactly.
it believing it to be true
exactly.
as it's presented
make,
to us, and they would
system,
say it's not true.
Your system is built, as all of our systems are built, mine too, are built on certain things which at heart we came to believe were truth.
And see, I disagree. I believe that mine was built on the revelation of God
but that's
revealing
a, that's
it to mankind
that
directly.
That's a faith that
yeah,
you
yeah, but
have.
I feel like it's that is based
believe.
In history.
See,
there are actual historical events that lead it along.
Hey, remember me?
Yes.
Yeah, oh, yes.
How you doing over there?
You're listening.
This is Troy Skinner. I'd like to introduce you guys today. We invited him to be on the show with us.
He's keeping us from
he's the host.
Peacefully apart.
You're listening to the Frederick Faith Debate on Frederick's News Radio 930 WFMD. And we jumped so quickly into so many different things that
sure.
I'm jotting down a bunch
even
of notes.
Even though we're enjoying it, that
yeah.
might be confusing
well,
to
we could spend,
others.
We could spend an hour on, I have probably half a dozen to a dozen
this,
different
yeah.
notes. We could probably spend an hour on each one of these little jots. And so I'll have to figure out how to lay that out. But it's been good because it's given me a chance to do this note taking. So I appreciate that.
Uh-huh.
I do want to ask, to lay a general foundation, I don't want to assume that anybody has heard the show before, knows who Jonathan Schweitzer is.
Okay.
And certainly, even if you have heard the show before, you probably don't know who Karen is. And what you currently believe to be true about God existing or not existing and how you arrived at that place. And I don't want to speak for you, John, but I mean, you can go first. Keep it brief if you would, but you grew up in a Christian household, right?
Yes, I did.
So
yeah.
that's part of your story. So give us some of the backstory about why you hold the current view that you do about God's existence. And when you're done, I will have Karen do the same thing.
Wow, that's very complex. How I come to believe the way that I believe. I think the bottom line issue for me is that as a young child, it became clear to me that that there were people out there that were less than kind. And this this revelation of a God who desires to be my friend, and so much so that he would send his son to die on a cross on my behalf. And that he didn't just want to do that for me, but he wanted to do it for everybody. And so I wasn't just an outcast that felt like I had no friends. I was welcomed into the arms of God, even though I knew I wasn't perfect. I knew I didn't have it all together. There were reasons at times that I even felt less than, you know, a part of the group. That he accepted me for who I was and poured out his grace to me and then sent his spirit to live inside me to help me. You know, to grow the revelation of the closeness and the nearness and the fullness of who God was it fits the idea of God that I feel like is the only appropriate rationale for what God would be like. What a man truly desires is unfailing love. Better to be poor than a liar, and greater love is no man than this, that he would lay down his life for his friends. A God that keeps himself distant makes no sense to me whatsoever. A God who does not make a way for anybody that feels far away to be close to him does not make sense to me. And there being no God makes absolutely no sense to me whatsoever.
All right, Dr. Karen Gray. I don't know any of your backstories. I don't know if you grew up in a religious household or.
Oh, I did. Certainly, my mother was. My father was not until later in his life religious, but my mother was born into and raised in quite a religious family. Canadian farmers on the Alberta Prairie. She was an Anglican. When my parents moved to Spokane, Washington, where I was raised. Mother started going to the cathedral in Spokane because that was the Episcopal church she could get to by bus. We were actually pretty poor, blue-collar background. Mother says I began to ask questions of a basic nature about life, reality, God, etc., almost as soon as I started talking. We probably share that in common. I asked to be confirmed in the Episcopal Church. Confirmation normally happens about puberty, and I asked to be confirmed early. That brought me to the attention of the dean of the cathedral, and we began to meet. He gave me things to read. We would discuss theology. I read Tillich, Barth, Niebuhr when I was in my early teens.
By the way, in case anybody's listening doesn't know those names, those are heavyweight Christian
German
names.
What
German,
were called neo-Orthodox theology of the middle 20th century.
Yeah.
Very interesting movement, very profound thinkers, very deep, and of course somewhat reacting, especially in later years, Niebuhr earlier on, but later to the whole horror of the Second World War and whatnot.
Yeah.
But very socially concerned, interesting branch of theology, some of them more than others. But God never made sense to me, I have to say. It did not fit with the world. None of the ways in which people were understanding God, explaining him, or talking about things like life after death and whatnot did not make sense to me. When I was in high school, I had a teacher who had studied under a Fulbright in Thailand, and he was a literature teacher. He decided to give us some Eastern literature to read, and I read some Theravada Buddhist texts under him, and for the first time in my life, I said, I can't believe it. This is how I understand the world. Now, I don't call myself a Buddhist because I don't accept the doctrines of karma and rebirth. And most Buddhists, that's kind of basic. But Theravada Buddhism in particular, which is a more scholastic form of Buddhism than many are, and very intensively psychological, looking a lot. In fact, the vocabulary and the language of that form of Buddhism for psychology is like the vocabulary for snow in Inuit languages. There are just, for almost every emotion, every state of the mind, there are many, many more words than in English because that's what they were studying and that they understood as core. And the basic teaching of the Buddha's Four Noble Truths and Eightfold Path became for me just like, I can't believe it. This is how it's fitting for me. It's working out. I continued to study, though, because I really loved Christian literature. I loved much of what I found in Christianity. I loved many of the ideals. I thought I could solve my problems. That's really what sent me off to the Harvard Divinity School. And ultimately, to my doctorate studies, looking into non-theistic religiousness in Buddhism and radical theologians, especially at that time, that was in the early 70s, the Death of God school was pretty much taking a lot of attention at that time. But I really dug deeper than that because I considered that actually relatively superficial, and I still do. And I looked at other Christians who had many of the same problems I had. Ultimately, I never solved those problems, and what I came to realize when I was about 35 was that it's a little like deciding that you're not heterosexual, that you're a homosexual. Well, I'm not a homosexual, but I had to admit there was no way that I could be a theist and be honest with myself. And self-honesty is very, very important to me. I think that is a final and critical point, is that one not lie to oneself.
Well, that got us settled down at least, and it gave us a foundation upon which to build, but we'll have to do that building on the next show, because we've reached the end of the line here. But later on this afternoon, Dr. Karen Gray will be speaking at the monthly meeting, I think it's a monthly meeting, of Fresh Frederick Secular Humanists Club, or whatever they call it. I don't know if they call it a club, organization, whatever.
But organization.
The Frederick Secular Humanists get together at the Frederick County Library, and their featured speaker this afternoon, this month, is Dr. Karen Gray, and she'll be presenting an interactive exploration of religious atheism. And we, next week, will pick up on some of these scribbled notes I've made to myself. I'll pick the one that I think makes the most sense for us to dive into next, and we'll try to tackle that as best as we can in the 27 minutes or so that we have on this show. Thank you, Dr. Karen Gray, for being on the show today.
Fun.
It's great to have you here.
Pastor Jonathan Schweitzer from Crossroads Valley Chapel here in town. And I'm Troy Skinner. Again, thank you to our sponsors, AllShred Mobile Document Destruction, Shredding Today for Growth Tomorrow, Dynamic Living Solutions, If You Don't Own a Purifier, You Are a Purifier, and Putman Plumbing and Heating, How Can We Make You Smile? Thanks so much for listening to the Frederick Faith Debate on WFMD. God bless.